Hey, what's up, everybody?
Welcome back to Mile High Podcast, episode 293. I'm your host, Kendall.
And I'm your host, Josh.
And we are joined by our lovely producer, Janelle.
What's up, everybody?
And we have quite a crazy case to go over today.
Yes, another very mysterious disappearance. And this case takes place down in Aruba, down the Caribbean, where...
Caribbean. And I know some people say it differently. Caribbean.
I always go back and forth. I think it's Caribbean is the proper pronunciation.
But then what's the movie? Pirates of the Caribbean.
Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's always pronounced I feel like, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who pronounces it Pirates of the Caribbean?
I always say Caribbean.
Even in the movies, you would say that?
Well, I've never seen those movies, so.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Sure.
Well, one, who cares?
Okay.
I have seen them one time. Chaos. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyways, we're going to be covering a case that unfolds in Aruba. Many of you probably have heard of this island before from another very popular case or infamous case, depending on how you look at it, the Natalie Holloway case.
Yeah.
And the case we're going to be talking about today actually takes place a year before mm-hmm. Natalie Holloway disappears. And the individual who goes missing is named Max DeVries. And he was down there with his family on vacation and things were going great. They were having a wonderful time until things kind of unfolded after they met these two very sketchy individuals, a father and his adopted son, and things went really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is very frustrating because, as many of us know from the Natalie Holloway case, the Aruban authorities and the Aruban government, when it comes to investigating crimes, don't really do a great job at it.
No.
And so this one will leave you very frustrated. It'll leave you with very little answers, unfortunately, as to what happened to Max, because he pretty much just disappears without a trace, and we don't really know exactly what happened to him. But these two individuals, which we'll get into, we think they definitely have some part to play in his disappearance.
Yeah, I think everyone will agree once we start going over it. But yeah, one of the frustrating elements of this case too is that we all know how much coverage Natalie Holloway's case got, and like we always say, everyone deserves that level of coverage, you know?
Correct.
But at the same time, other people deserve it as well and often don't get it. And for Max's case to have taken place the year before Natalie's, and, you know, Natalie has become kind of a household name. So, I mean, pretty much most people at least know the name and are kind of familiar with her case. But when you say Max DeVries, no one really knows.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, again, this one, it's been a while since this all unfolded, but his mother is desperate for answers as to what happened to her son. So is his sister. His dad sadly passed away back at the time that this all unfolded, but slightly before, but it's very important that his story is still told, and hopefully somebody will eventually come forward with either information or those involved with his disappearance finally confess to what actually happened to him. Because the circumstances around his disappearance are very sketchy, and there's really not a solid version of events because a lot of the stories change. So yeah, buckle up for this one. It's kind of a wild ride, and it's always unfortunate when things happen on vacation because I think many of us, including ourselves, it's like the last thing in the back of your mind that you're ever really thinking about. You go on vacation to relax, to kind of get away from your normal routine. And I think there's this false sense of security, especially when you go to resorts, and mm-hmm. you just kind of have this assumption that I'm good, I'm safe, I don't have to worry about anybody.
Sort of let your guard down.
Yeah. Well, you're in a relaxed state. And I think that's what it really is you go there to relax. So, mm-hmm. you lower your guard, and unfortunately, there's bad people in these places.
Waiting to prey on people like that.
Exactly. So Max is 14 years old at the time of his disappearance, which makes it so much worse because he had a whole life ahead of him. Yeah. And ultimately, we have no idea what happened to him.
Yeah. And just a bit of a trigger warning here. This case is definitely upsetting, not only because he's 14, but some of the things we'll be getting into when it comes to these two, I don't even know how to describe
predators.
Them. Yeah. Predators, I would say. Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
Well, kind of. I don't know.
Allegedly in reference to Max, but their past is littered with crimes, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Before we just go over everything in the intro, let's just dive in because there's a lot to say.
I did want to quickly, we haven't done this in a while, but I wanted to quickly remind everybody one way you can support the show that's absolutely free is just making sure you're following us on Spotify or social media or subscribing if you watch on YouTube. Or listen to Apple Podcasts
and our team.
Absolutely. And ratings and reviews are always welcome, good or bad. We love to see it. So
that's right.
Take 1 second and just do that for us. We'd really appreciate it. But let's go ahead and dive in.
Okay. So Max DeVries, he was born on April 18th, 1990 to his parents, George and Yvonne. He had a younger sister named Dominique, and she was born 2 years later in 1992. Their family lived in Brighton, Michigan, which is a small and affluent neighborhood outside of Detroit. In 2000, the city had a population of only 6,701 people. So, I mean, not tiny, but definitely, you know, on the smaller side, you could say. And a quarter of the households had children under 18, making it sort of the perfect place to raise kids. The DeVries family had many friends and other families who were at similar stages in life, and they could trust that the neighborhood would sort of watch over Max and Dominique as they grew up. Max's father, George, was a strategic asset manager for Dunkin' Donuts, and he would basically help other business owners open new franchises across Michigan. And Yvonne was a stay-at-home mom who prided herself in her ability to care for and really invest and develop her kids. More than anything, the family loved water, actually. From the moment the kids could be at sea, Max and Dominique were taught by George how to pilot the family's sailboat, and they took numerous vacations to places on the water, including Aruba. And by the time Max was 14, he was really experienced with various watercraft, including jet skis, that's important to note, fishing boats, and was even named a charter boat first mate. So pretty impressive at the age of 14. And God, he is just such a cute kid. You can just tell from the pictures, kind of says everything about his personality. He just seemed so full of joy. And he's described as someone who was really smart. Things just came quickly to him. And he was witty for his age. He had many friends. He was the type of person that people just gravitated towards. And more than anything, Max loved his sister, and the two of them would play in their family's backyard while George barbecued. Now, according to a family friend and a reporter named Lila Lazarus, who we will be talking about later in this episode as well, the DeVries family were living the American dream, and their happiness as a family really only grew. But sadly, on November 10th, 2002, George suddenly suffered a heart attack and passed away. It was like super, super shocking, devastating to this family, but they were very resilient when it came to how they dealt with it. Lila, the reporter, actually said, how do you even go on from this beautiful life to being a single mom and picking up the pieces on your own, which would be incredibly hard. And Yvonne is very, very strong. I don't know if I would have the strength that she does. And their family absolutely did pick up the pieces and moved on. And the bond between Max, Yvonne, and Dominique really only deepened in the year following George's death. 18 months later, in May of 2004, Yvonne decided to plan a vacation in Aruba to celebrate the family's resilience in making it through the school year and sort of honor George by going somewhere on the water because he loved the water so much. So in May of 2004, Yvonne, Max, Dominique, and George's sister-in-law, Pat, all took a trip to Aruba. And they stayed along the beach at the La Cabana Resort. And this resort is absolutely massive. It has multiple pools, a private section on Eagle Beach, and various places to rent boating equipment and get sea tours, you know, all the usual things.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
It does.
4-star resort, still open, great reviews, it looks like.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, it's a pretty big resort. Hmm. Very popular, it looks like. We've never been to Aruba, so I don't know exactly what it's like down there. But I've heard good things, and
it does look
beautiful. A beautiful, beautiful spot. I mean, the water, if you just look at pictures or video of Aruba beaches, I mean, it is picturesque for sure.
Definitely.
Beautiful.
Well, their family definitely took advantage of this, and Yvonne planned multiple trips and excursions onto the water, and Max acted like himself, high energy, goofy, and he made friends with other kids at the resort. Naturally, like we said, he was someone that people were just gravitated towards. And just like when they were at home in Brighton, they trusted people around them to have fun and care for Max and Dominique. And with all the amenities that La Cabana boasted, Max wanted to see if the resort had a pool table. So on the evening of Saturday, May 8th, Yvonne was walking by the front desk, and she saw a man in his mid-30s get pool balls from the concierge. And she asked the man if the resort had a pool table, and he said yes, and it was on the second floor or in the second floor lobby. And Yvonne said that Max would be going up there as he wanted to play pool. She thanked this man and then went back to her room. Then the next evening, Max and Yvonne went to the pool table and found the same man from the night before playing with his father. They were an adoptive father-son duo, and they asked if Max wanted to play with the younger man. You know, sounds kind of strange, like as if he's a child that wants to play with another child, but no, he was a 30-year-old man. So now their names, this could get confusing. Their names are David Russell Stacy Jr. and David Russell Stacy Sr. So as we get into things here, we're going to be referring to them as just Jr. and Sr. since they do have the same exact name. And as we already kind of explained in the beginning, these two are creeps. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. So Jr. ends up playing pool with Max while Yvonne is speaking with Sr. And Sr. said they were in Aruba to celebrate the anniversary of their adoption on May 25th. He had adopted Jr. as a very young father, though he did not specify precisely when. And Sr. was 55 when they met the DeVries family, and Jr. was 36. While they continued talking, Yvonne told Sr. that they were visiting the island after her husband passed away 18 months ago, and they were honoring his memory and celebrating their family's strength. Sr. told her that his wife had passed away earlier in the year. And the two were really happy that they, you know, had found someone else on vacation who could sort of relate to what they were both going through, losing a loved one somewhat recently. So meanwhile, Max and Jr. played pool, and they mainly discussed cars and motorcycles because Jr. was a mechanic in Knoxville, Tennessee. And they seemed to become fast friends, which again sounds very strange considering he's 36 and Max is 14. But Max really did enjoy playing pool with him, and they seemed nice. So the two families planned to meet again the following night, and Max really liked hanging out with Jr., and Yvonne thought that Sr. and Aunt Pat may actually get along because they were both similar in age and both single. He was also successful and worked as an accomplished patent lawyer who lived in a suburb outside of Chicago. Then the following night, the two families meet again at the pool table. Max and Jr. played pool again, and both of them enjoyed, you know, the friendly competition. Yvonne told Sr. that the family had planned to go parasailing the next day, and Jr. said that they had built up a, quote, good friendship at this point and asked if they could join the DeVries family. Yvonne agreed, and they all planned to meet the next day around 10 a.m. by the resort's pool. So, while Yvonne and Sr. planned the parasailing trip for the next day, Max and Jr. continued to play pool. And though we don't know how this got brought up, Jr. reportedly told Max that his mother had died when he was young, which clearly conflicts with what Sr. had been telling Yvonne the night before about how his wife had passed recently. So still, the DeVries family was excited to have met some friendly faces while on vacation and seemed to have the same love of doing things on the water.
Yeah, it's kind of, you might be like, this is kind of fishy that their, you know, backgrounds and stories are lining up so perfectly. I mean, they all of a sudden, you know, they have the same interests and, yeah, you know, they're, I don't know. I just, when I first heard this, I was like, oh, this is just kind of weird. It's almost too good to be true. You know what I mean? Like the chemistry and just, you know, oh, we're going through the same things. And our lives as well.
Which is possible.
Definitely possible. Definitely happens.
Seems rather convenient.
Yeah. Still a bit strange, in my opinion, but...
Yeah.
The next day, the two families met at the resort's pool to go parasailing. They met with a guide at Sunshine Water Sports on the beach in front of the La Cabana Resort. The guide took them out to a sandbar about 3 miles from shore. The trip was uneventful, and the two families enjoyed each other's company. After the trip, they returned to La Cabana and ate pizza at the hotel restaurant. Max had noticed that Sunshine Water Sports also rented jet skis and asked his mom if he could take one out. Also wanting to jet ski, Junior offered to accompany Max. Max and Junior rented jet skis for $40, which allowed for 45 minutes out there on the water. Max was an experienced jet skier and he had no issue. It was Junior's first time, but he also enjoyed the trip and said that he even took off his life vest and dove into the water at one point because it was so clear. They took the jet skis to the sandbar they had just visited on the parasailing trip and returned within the time limit. Then they met everyone at the pool where Max played with his sister. He asked Junior to play with him in the pool, and he did. Junior jumped in and threw a beach ball around with Max and Dominique. It looked like Max and Junior had really bonded, and Yvonne was talking to Senior about how close they seemed to be. Then Senior said something very strange. Quote, "We were looking out of our bedroom window, and we saw you were playing with your kid and thought we had to meet you."
That gives me chills.
Creepy?
Yeah, I would say so.
But in the moment, you know, after you've had all of these positive interactions with these guys, that probably isn't, you know, at the forefront of your mind. You're probably thinking, not really thinking twice about it, right? You're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe kind of weird, but, you know, maybe it's just how he said it. They played for a while longer until Junior went back to his room to rest. Senior, Yvonne, Max, and Dominique played pool later on, but eventually they all went to bed. It seemed like a great day. They made friends, and despite some strange statements, Yvonne trusted these two men. Around noon on Wednesday, May 12th, Yvonne was with Max and Dominique at the hotel pool. It had been a regular morning, and Max had been his goofy self and was taking pictures placing Dominique's stuffed animal pig on a grill, which there's a photo of this. Big smiles, having a good time. Soon after, Senior came down alone and met them by the pool with a book in his hand, though he did not intend to read it. Senior told Yvonne that he also wanted to go jet skiing with Max as Junior told him how much fun it was. Senior even offered to pay for both of them. So this is a little weird, right? He goes out with his 30-year-old son and now this 50-some-year-old man wants to now take Max out on his own trip jet skiing alone.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of strange. And Senior even offered to pay for both of them. Even though Yvonne still trusted Senior at this point, she initially said no, as Max had just been the day before. But strangely, Senior was kind of forceful about this, restating that he would pay and, you know, it'd be so much fun. And of course, Max, jet skiing is a ton of fun. If you've never been jet skiing,
it's a total blast. Yeah.
I always do it whenever I have the opportunity because it's a ton of fun. And so he's begging his mom, "I want to go jet skiing." And since this was a special vacation and Max was having a ton of fun, she finally agreed to let him go. So Max and Senior left the beach at around 1:45 p.m. for another 45-minute ride from Sunshine Water Sports. Yvonne stayed at the pool with Dominique and noticed that time had flew by. After what felt like an hour had gone by, she started to get worried, but she calmed herself saying, quote, "It's fine, they're enjoying themselves." But it kept getting later and later with no sign of Max or Senior. Yvonne decided to go to Sunshine Water Sports along the beach as they might be returning the jet skis and she hoped to see them there. When she arrived, she saw a man from the rental company standing in the water while he scanned the horizon with binoculars. She asked about Max and Senior and the man said he was looking for them as they had not returned yet. At this point, Yvonne began to panic and the hotel manager came to the beach to help look for them. Yvonne gave him the names of Max, Senior, and Junior, and that hotel manager then went to Junior's room. Once he got there, he repeatedly pounded on Junior's door, but no one answered, and it seemed like no one was inside. The hotel then sent multiple boats into the water to start searching for Max and Senior, but still after nearly 3 hours, no one had even seen Junior either. So all three of them are nowhere to be found at this point. Finally, Yvonne spotted a boat that was returning to shore after having found Senior and the two jet skis improperly tied together, but Max was not on board. Junior appeared on the beach beside Yvonne as the boat pulled to shore, and she asked him where he had been and said that they had been looking for him. And his answer was that "Oh, I was drunk and passed out in my room." Which Yvonne thought this was suspicious, because how could he have been so drunk that he didn't hear the hotel manager banging on his door? And mind you, this is nearly like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So you're still drunk from probably the previous night at 3 p.m. the next day. I mean, it's just kind of weird. When the rescue team finally brought Senior to shore, Yvonne asked what had happened to Max, and Senior responded, quote, "He's still out there." Senior said they returned to the sandbar and had gotten off the jet skis, but they wouldn't start when they got back on. Senior heard a thump as they tried to get them to work, and Max floated away. Yvonne asked if he tried to go after him or call out to him, but he said, quote, "No, we had an agreement not to speak."
What the fuck does that even mean?
Which makes absolutely no sense. Alarm bells are going off. "No, we had an agreement not to speak." Like, why would you even say something like that? And what context does that make any sense whatsoever? And obviously, Yvonne is shocked by this statement because, I mean, she thought she was sending her 14-year-old son out with a responsible adult that would look after her kid. Jet skis are a ton of fun, but there's dangers involved with operating these machines that go really, really fast on the water and all the other risks out there. So how could he have just left Max out there and returned? That still baffles me. But then Yvonne noticed scratch marks and bruises along Senior's head, neck, and hands. At that point, the police got involved and they brought Yvonne Senior Jr. back to the station to make some statements. Yvonne asked the authorities if they could perform a DNA sample swab underneath Senior's fingernails and even offered to pay for a polygraph test. And the Aruban authorities, after hearing this, just completely ignored her and said, quote, "This is not America." And what's even crazier is that they allowed Senior to shower before he gave his testimony, which would have removed any potential DNA evidence.
Unbelievable.
So it's very clear at this point, when he returns without Max, she's instantly suspicious of Senior. She notices scratches. She's starting to, I think, imagine what could have happened out there. I mean, she's obviously thinking the worst. This man may have attacked my son. That's why he didn't return with him. And so she's trying to do the right thing by getting them to take a DNA sample and things like that. And the Aruban authorities, clearly crime is furthest from their mind. They're like, accident.
So meanwhile, the largest search operation in Aruban history up until that point ensued. And they brought out the Aruban Coast Guard, helicopters, and a Marine plane who searched the day and night for any sign of Max. And it was also found that Sunshine Water Sports was an illegal operation, and they did not check IDs before renting large equipment. Insane. And it was obviously shut down on May 13th. Though it is unclear if police actually contacted them and collected rental information from the business.
It does seem, however, that they might have reopened or some other.
Oh, you found a Google review for
them? Yeah. Oh, there's like a bunch of them on TripAdvisor.
Really?
And they all have like really good ratings. And
oh, wow.
Like the most recent review is from 2023. Now, maybe this is just a different
one. They could have gotten their shit together since
this happened. Yeah, who knows? But on Eagle Beach in Aruba.
Yeah.
Sunshine Water Sports, it's got to be them, right?
I mean, it could have been a prior owner, though. Like, yeah, it could have changed ownership. I was going to mention, though, the not checking IDs thing is a big no-no when renting this type of motorized equipment. Because we don't know this for certain, but the age to ride a jet ski like on your own, usually like if you're a child, you can ride with an adult on the back or something. Right. But to operate it on your own, you have to be at least 16 years old. So Max was 14. So that kind of brings up an issue, right? He was able to get on a jet ski, whether he lied to them, which honestly, it's the water sports company fault for not checking IDs and verifying that he was of age to actually rent the jet ski. But,
which is crazy to think about. If they had checked IDs and actually followed that law, this may not have ever happened.
Maybe, or he would have just gotten on the back with Senior.
Possibly.
But you're right. It could have absolutely changed the course of events that unfolded for sure.
Yeah. So Although no suspects were named, Yvonne, Dominique, Aunt Pat, and Junior and Senior were ordered to stay on the island until the search concluded. And Junior and Senior returned to the police a few days later and gave additional statements. A family friend named Glenn called Yvonne to ask how the trip went, because they were actually supposed to be home already at this point. And Yvonne said that they were still in Aruba and that Max went jet skiing and hadn't been seen since. Now, Glenn noted that Max was a natural fisherman and maybe he had potentially found a cove somewhere. And obviously, he's just trying to probably look on the bright side of things, give her some reassurance. But Yvonne responded at that point and said, Glenn, that was almost a week ago. The Aruban police then notified Yvonne that they called off their search on Saturday, May 15th, 2004, and that Max was officially lost at sea. Cannot imagine getting news like that or hearing those words said about my child. It is just so horrendous. And Yvonne said that everything sort of got a little blurry at that point. The DeVries family, Junior and Senior, then left the island on Tuesday, May 18th. Now, it seems to have been reported that they left on the same flight. We couldn't get confirmation of that, so we're not completely sure, but I can't imagine how awkward that'd be. But that probably was the case. I'm sure there's not that many flights leaving.
Yeah, I mean, usually a lot of flights that go to the Caribbean connect through Florida. Although it's possible they got on a different connecting flight or something.
Maybe.
But yeah, maybe they're on the same flight. That'd be
weird. Well, I bring that up because we're not sure exactly when, either before they left or when they were on the flight or at the airport or something like that. Senior actually asked Yvonne if he could send her flowers for Max's anniversary.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, very strange, just inappropriate and weird. Like, just shut up and don't say anything.
It's like overcompensating almost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? And I feel like it's a weird way to get address and like keep an eye on them in some way. Or maybe it is overcompensating, like trying to show I'm just this caring guy. I cared so much about Max.
Yeah, it's a way to evade suspicion.
So much so that I did nothing as he was floating away in the water.
Right.
It's just bizarre.
I could have went. Use my jet ski to go pick them up out of the water. They had a one working jet ski.
We had agreement not to speak. Like, what even is that? I don't know. So obviously when he says this at whatever point it was, Yvonne just stares at him and says nothing, because what do you even say back to that? And this was the last time Yvonne saw either of them. And as they're flying home, Yvonne and Dominique are just staring out at the water. You know, something that at one point meant so much to their family had become a place of sadness, as they are now grieving Max and George.
Imagine
terrible.
Looking out the window at the water below, knowing that your brother or your son is just out there, potentially just floating in the ocean.
It's so disturbing. I would never want to leave.
Like, that must have been so difficult.
A child, or leaving without any family member after coming on this trip with such high hopes of it being this bonding, fun experience, and then just leaving without someone. God, it's so devastating.
I think it's very, very strange that they had the largest search in Aruban history at this point, and yet Max was not found.
Yeah.
At all. Because should have probably been found floating somewhere in the vicinity.
Possibly.
Right? Unless he got pushed out further.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
It's true. Very vast. But only 3 miles out from shore, that's not super far out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a map of Aruba, the water's pretty shallow in comparison to, you know, the rest of the ocean for a good ways out. I don't know the exact calculations as far as miles go, but it's crazy to me to think that he wasn't located.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He just vanished.
Well, we don't know for sure that he actually was still out there.
Right. True. We have no idea.
People, we live in 2024, a time where Everything is available to us at our fingertips via the internet, and that includes reviews. Now, I personally do not do anything or buy anything these days without looking at reviews first. You know, when it comes to movies and restaurants or any online purchase, I always look up reviews. And a game changer for me when it has come to my health is being able to look up reviews on doctors that are verified real reviews from real patients. And that's where ZocDoc comes in clutch. Now, I have been using ZocDoc since before they started sponsoring our shows. I truly recommend it. I have found several medical professionals that have become, you know, favorites for me that I have continued to see thanks to ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. There's no more awkwardly waiting on hold with a receptionist. And all of these docs have verified real reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. And you can filter for ones that take your insurance, are located near you, and basically treat any condition you're searching for. I mean, I'm sure everyone can relate that there is nothing worse than going through the whole process, feeling like you found a doctor, only to find they don't take your insurance. So ZocDoc just eliminates that problem completely. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is just between 24 and 72 hours. That's it. Sometimes you can even score same day appointments, which I was able to do recently through the ZocDoc app. It was amazing. So go to ZocDoc.com/milehigher and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/milehigher. ZocDoc.com/milehigher. Well, anyway, when Yvonne and Dominique got home, they experienced some strange things. Local news had reported on the story while they were searching for Max. And while some of these stories mentioned the two men that they met in Aruba, none looked into their past and repeated the Arubian government's theory that Max was just lost at sea. And when Dominique, who was only 12 at that point, returned to school, she was shocked to find out that everyone at school already heard the news. And this is crazy to me, but the school actually announced Max's disappearance over the loudspeakers. Can you imagine how upsetting that would be for Dominique?
I do see it, but also I've had something similar happen, like an announcement made over loudspeakers about a student before. There was a student that took their own life and they actually put that over the speakers.
Actually, the same thing happened in my school.
It's uncomfortable, but they made an announcement.
We had two students take their lives over winter break and we got back first thing Monday morning. They announced it on the loudspeakers, but I'm assuming that they had gotten permission from their families or something.
That's so weird because there was a girl who had passed away unexpectedly, and when we came in, like, she was in my class, and they, like, had counselors come in and talk to us privately, but I don't remember ever being, like, an intercom announcement.
Really? No. Yeah, no, I remember it so clearly, because it was so devastating. Everyone was just silent. But, yeah, I'm assuming that they maybe had asked their parents, but...
Well, you got to think, too. Maybe they were just assuming that everybody already knew because the news had been reporting on it.
So they thought it was okay. Dominique for that. Like, where was she?
Or
she
ask her, be like, are you okay class? With us doing this?
Yeah. Or like bring her out of class while this is going on so she doesn't have to deal with all these people just staring at her.
Or people being like, what?
Yeah.
What's going on? And like bombarding her with questions. And yeah, that's pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah. It really upset her. And she said that that was because it, quote, wasn't their business to tell.
So that's what makes me think that the family wasn't like, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was assuming that for my situation in school. Probably, clearly not in theirs.
Right.
But because media coverage was minimal, the misinformation surrounding Max's disappearance was widespread among Brighton locals. A supposed classmate of Max's wrote on their live blog journal that Max went out on the jet ski with an escort from the hotel and had just fallen off as he was towed to shore. For the most part, people just believe this was, you know, some type of freak accident. But for a while, Yvonne kind of did too. But the red flags and inconsistencies and the lies that these two men were telling made Yvonne question the official story. And as interest in his disappearance sort of went away, Yvonne was desperate for anyone to look into Max's case. Then, a year later, on May 30th, 2005, 18-year-old Natalie Holloway went missing while on a high school graduation trip to Aruba. Now, like we said earlier, the difference between the two cases is Natalie's coverage was just, endless.
CNN, breaking endless. News, yeah. Mm-hmm. Constant coverage.
24/7, really. And people began to notice how the Aruban government had tried to rush through that investigation, too. Critics suspected that they were looking for easy answers to protect tourism. Prime Minister Nelson Orlando Oduber said, "We can't allow anybody, either local or international, to harm our tourist industry. Tourism is our bread, is income for the government, our people, and the whole economy." He even tried to highlight the safety of Aruba and said that he swam alone each day at dawn, which kind of reminds us of politicians drinking contaminated tap water to say it's safe to drink. Like, same type of vibe there. But while Natalie Holloway's disappearance did not have a severe impact on tourism, groups did try to boycott travel to Aruba until a complete investigation into both Natalie and Max was complete. National coverage of Natalie's disappearance was so constant that Anderson Cooper actually said he wasn't going to report on it any longer until actual news develops. And this was more than 2 months after Natalie first disappeared. Yvonne noticed the increasing coverage of Aruba following Natalie's case, so she thought she could find someone to investigate Max's disappearance. And that's when Yvonne found Lila Lazarus, who, as we mentioned, was a local reporter. She was among the first to report on Junior and Senior's suspicious actions toward the DeVries family. In summer of 2005, Yvonne approached Lieutenant Corey Williams, who was a detective with the Livonia Police Department, and Lieutenant Williams was experienced with investigating crimes against children as he had just become one of the leads on the Oakland County child killer cold case. And for anyone who isn't familiar with that case, it occurred between 1976 and 1977, and at least 4 children in Oakland County, Michigan, were killed. Between February of 1976 and March of 1977, 4 children between the ages of 10 and 12 were abducted and killed in Oakland County. It became one of Michigan's most famous cold cases and is still unsolved. Lieutenant Williams was 15 when his father, an investigator with the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office, became involved in the case, and Yvonne provided the statements that the two men had made to Aruban authorities, and when Lieutenant Williams read them, he said, "The hair on the back of my neck stood up."
While reviewing the two men's police statements, Lieutenant Williams noticed some glaring inconsistencies. In Junior's first testimony, he said that they arrived in Aruba on Thursday, May 6, 2004. They came one day early and spent the night at the Holiday Inn before going to La Cabana the following day. He recounted meeting Yvonne at the front desk, but said that he and Max played pool alone that night until security guards kicked them out. He also talked about the parasailing trip and taking Max out on the jet skis, saying that Max had no difficulty as he piloted the jet ski while this was Junior's first time. The night before Max's disappearance, his father dropped Junior off at the Holiday Inn to meet up with a woman he had met the first night. Aruban authorities did not name or question this woman to verify this claim, so we have no idea if this actually happened or is true whatsoever. The next day, while Max and Senior were on the jet skis, Junior claimed he went to Eagle Beach in front of La Cabana and waited for around 45 minutes. He then returned to his room and fell asleep, only to be awakened as the phone rang a few hours later. On the other end was a hotel worker who asked if he was missing. He responded that he and his father shared the same name, and the hotel worker told him to go to Sunshine Water Sports immediately. And this was the first time that he learned that Max and his father were missing at sea. The first glaring inconsistency is the hotel staff banged on his door, which he claimed to have slept through. But how could he have slept through that if the phone ringing was enough to wake him up? Possibly the knocking or banging was, not real loud. Depending on where you are in the hotel room, if the AC's on, is there a possibility you may not hear the door knock?
Or maybe they weren't knocking that hard.
Yeah, exactly. Versus the phones right next to the bed where you're sleeping, generally.
Although, that's just purely trying to, make sense discount. Of a statement that does not make sense. I mean, clearly, in my opinion, that's just bullshit, but...
True. So while Junior's first testimony is strange, what he said in his second statement raised more suspicions. His story about taking Max on the jet skis is similar, but this time he mentioned that Max, quote, was basically inexperienced, even though he claimed the exact opposite in his first testimony. He also mentioned a strange man on the water without a life vest who passed by Max. Senior repeated this claim during his second testimony, so we believe they invented this man to steer suspicions towards someone else. Junior said that his father was a, quote, a good father to me. He was never married. And, quote, we were always only the two of us. When I was growing up, there never used to be a female person with us, which directly invalidated what Senior told Yvonne about his wife, who died earlier that year. Junior also mentioned that he was involved with the law once while intoxicated in front of his house when he was 21, but also noted that Senior was never arrested. He thought Max, quote, was or is 16 years of age and he looked older. He was very mature. Another creepy line, especially when you consider what is to come.
Yeah.
It's unclear if a Reuben authorities asked a question or if he just volunteered this quote, but he said, 100% hetero. I have never had intimate contacts with boys or men, which I would love to know how that came up exactly, because that is very concerning, especially in these circumstances. Senior's testimony also pointed to a Reuben authorities' shoddy investigation as they documented the wounds he had sustained that ultimately worried Yvonne. Authorities noted small wounds on the thumb, ring finger, and a red spot on the middle finger of his right hand, as well as two small cuts on the middle finger and a small wound under the ring finger of his left hand. The insides of both of his palms were severely bruised, and while authorities did not record the scratch marks Yvonne had noticed, it's unclear if they made this record before or after he was allowed to shower at the police station. In Senior's first testimony, he and Max went straight for the sandbar, but they couldn't find it, and Max took off his life vest after 10 minutes and dove into the water. Max couldn't get the jet ski to start when he got back on. They tried tying the craft together, but couldn't manage as the jet skis would capsize without movement, and after an hour, they decided to float on the water while they held the jet skis together with a rope. Senior then alleged that Max swam towards the shore. He said, quote, at a given moment, Max started swimming towards the shore. We had not agreed on anything with each other. He started swimming, and I stayed back with the wave runners. At a given moment, I looked in his direction and saw that he was drifting away in the direction of the big hotels. He was no longer swimming. He was drifting by the means of his life jacket. I tried to swim to him, but I couldn't. Now, this is a very strange statement with some contradiction in there, because this statement not only goes against directly what he had told Yvonne earlier on the beach, but Max knew what to do in case of an emergency at sea, would never attempt to swim to shore from 3 miles out at least. Just none of that adds up whatsoever. And he's like, he's drifting by the means of his life jacket. I tried to swim to him, but I couldn't. What does that even mean?
Bullshit.
I just couldn't swim to him?
Yeah. No, I mean, everything he said was so vague.
In his second testimony, Senior mentioned how interesting and attractive he found Yvonne. And he, quote, availed himself to speak with her. Senior said that in many cases, Max and his family would meet Junior and Senior to chat or play with his son. And to me, it seems like Senior said this to make it seem like the DeVries family sought them out to play with Max, as opposed to what he told Yvonne about when he saw them and, quote, had to meet them, peeping through their window. So again, minimizing statements they made prior that probably would seem creepy and make them not look good. So they're trying to flip it onto the DeVries family at this point. Senior also stated that he was not married, nor had he ever been married, saying, quote, I have not yet met a single one who said yes to me, end quote.
It's very different from what he was telling her before.
Clearly, yeah. Clearly trying to manipulate them with their lies. But when Yvonne learned that he had lied, she said that it, quote, seemed like they were trying to mirror our tragedy, which I 100% agree with.
Oh, they absolutely were.
Because they know that that's going to build trust. Yeah, yes. They know that that's going to make them feel more comfortable with
them. The classic recipe, yeah. Right?
It's what groomers do.
Mm-hmm.
In this version of events, Senior pointed out how he got the wounds and scratches, saying that once the jet ski stalled, he tried to climb up between them and sustain his wounds while climbing, which if you've ever been on jet skis before, you probably know that this doesn't make a whole lot of sense because jet skis are made from smooth fiberglass. And I was just on jet skis a earlier this past year. And I was trying to think, is there anything on there that could possibly cut you? Unless you were like underneath or in the back of the jet ski where, you know, it's pushing water out where the motor's at and all of that. I don't really see just how climbing onto them you could possibly get yourself so scraped up like that. Is it possible? Maybe, but definitely doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The only thing that makes sense to me is the bruises on the palms. Because if you've ever ridden jet skis, and especially on rough waters like the ocean, once you start flying across the water and you kind of hit the waves, you're definitely kind of bumping along, and your palms definitely kind of smash against the handlebars a little bit and can definitely make them bruise. But bruise to the point that you can actually see them, I mean, that's pretty intense. It then went on to say, after Senior tried to climb the jet skis, he noticed Max had fallen off his and drifted away. Senior called out to Max, but Max did not answer. In this version, Senior swam towards Max, but, quote, decided to stop swimming and float in order to not create any problems in which Max would have to help me. After drifting calmly for about 20 minutes, I lost sight of Max. When I saw Max for the last time, he was floating very calmly, moved now and then, but did not try to swim. We did not have any eye contact and had not said anything to each other either. He was approximately 80 yards away from me. Again, this does not make a whole lot of sense whatsoever. And again, why would you not go and try? Clearly, Max is in trouble potentially. Why did you not try to get over to him or bring the authorities to where he was at or where you last saw him drifting away?
Yeah.
Just makes no sense whatsoever. Because it's like they really went to the sandbar. How far away from the sandbar did Max possibly get in this amount of time? Like, the ocean's going to move you down, but with all of the aircraft and boats out there looking for him, it just blows my mind that they did not find Max floating somewhere.
Yeah.
If this all happened the way that he said it did.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that this did not happen the way he said he did.
Well, and the story keeps changing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
it's hard to believe any of this.
You have to just keep in mind, too, that Max was so familiar with, I mean, all types of water equipment.
More so than a typical.
And just the water in general.
Like, yeah.
Spent tons of time in the water, knew how to swim very well.
Knew boater safety very, very well.
Yeah. Yep.
So none of this lines up with his skills or training.
No.
At all. Senior ended this testimony by restating how he had received his wounds and mentioned that the only time he was in trouble with the law previously was in 1983 for driving under the influence. So again, he's trying to be like, well, I've only been in trouble before for this, and just offering up this information to make it seem like, I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah.
Let me try to convince you.
I got this clean record. No need to look at me.
But after reading Junior and Senior statements, Lieutenant Williams said, quote, it's easy for someone to continue telling the truth, but it's hard to maintain a lie.
Yep.
Which is very, very true. Lieutenant Williams also noticed that the Aruban authorities had not performed a background check on the two men. They just took their words at face value. So he took it upon himself to call a police station in Southern California, which is where the two men had met, to see if they were involved in anything other than the DUI and public intoxication mentioned in their statements. And within minutes, Lieutenant Williams learned that police had arrested David Russell Stacy Sr. in 1981 for, you probably could guess it, crimes against children. What's worse is that the victim in this case was none other than David Russell Stacy Jr., who was 14 years old at the time, same age as Max, which is very concerning. Junior grew up in a Children's Baptist home of Southern California, where he was likely an orphan and had a different name, and Senior met Junior at this time and would visit Junior before he officially adopted him. In the report for this arrest, David Stacy Sr. was referred to as the victim's father, though it's unclear if the adoption had formally taken place yet. But in the report, Junior said that his father was a, quote, F-slur, who molested him on various occasions. Lieutenant Williams could not find out how this case was adjudicated. Still, through his experience as a detective, he knew that not only do victims of pedophilia go on to become pedophiles themselves, but they often work together with the perpetrator to find new victims sometimes.
Yeah, we've covered cases like that before.
Yep, definitely. I've definitely covered cases like that on Lights Out, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very unfortunate. But it does happen.
Yeah, it reminds me of from the Johnny Gosch case. I can't remember the guy's name. I'm forgetting now, but I remember the one of the guys that worked, you know, to abuse Johnny, well, what he claims, you know, he had been abused and taken into human trafficking as well. And it's very common pattern.
And sometimes it's just out of fear too. If I don't do this, then the abuse will continue against me. So if I join in, then it'll be somebody else and not me, is what I've seen in other cases too.
Sometimes,
But after he learned all this, Lieutenant Williams was confident that the Aruban investigation was incomplete and they just wanted to get Max's family off of the island so as to not interfere with tourism there.
Yeah, I think that's pretty obvious.
Lieutenant Williams alleged that David Stacy Sr. used Junior to groom Max, get close to him, and make Yvonne comfortable enough to leave them alone together. Then he brought Max onto the water, molested him, and killed Max when he started resisting. After he reviewed the Aruban testimonies and received that 1981 arrest report, Lieutenant Williams contacted an FBI friend based out of Ann Arbor, which I want to just give this guy props. Like, he's going above and beyond to try to try to get help for this family. And
genuinely cares.
We'll talk about a little bit more later, but the most recent kind of mini doc series on it, on the show Never Seen Again, he's a part of it and interviewed. And I don't know, I just really felt like he wanted to help this family and really cares about Max.
Which, side note, Never Seen Again, great true crime show, which I don't say that often about true crime, like highly produced true crime, because it's often very exploitive. But I feel like they're doing a really good job of letting like families really tell their story and taking the lead without being salacious and re-traumatizing.
Absolutely.
Just wanted a little shout out if you're looking for something to watch.
So Lieutenant Williams relayed all the information that he had just gathered to the agent at the FBI, who agreed that David Stacy Sr. most likely killed Max. This agent ended up getting involved with the case, and though the crime occurred internationally, the FBI had jurisdiction since it was between two U.S. citizens. And at the beginning, work was very slow, as Lieutenant Williams was working full-time on the Oakland County child killers case and could only work with a few agents within the FBI. And when they decided to question Junior and Senior, they had to determine which would help the case more. They planned to interview Junior first, as he was not a suspect in Max's murder, and the plan was to get information from him before they would bring in Senior for questioning as well. In the fall of 2008, the FBI brought Junior in for questioning, and Junior's story remained much the same. He said he was passed out drunk in his room while his father took Max out on the jet skis, and he denied any criminal wrongdoing in Max's disappearance. The FBI then asked Junior if he returned the next day to perform a polygraph test on his story. And he agreed before leaving the office, but probably guessed it too. He never returned.
Big shock there.
Yep, probably because he knew it's going to be hard to pass a test. And Lieutenant Williams even said someone who doesn't show up for a polygraph test is because they know they can't pass it.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Which again, polygraph tests aren't always accurate. And, no, you know,
not admissible in court, but.
But still. A useful tool, nonetheless. The FBI and Lieutenant Williams then started putting their case together against Junior and Senior and planned to bring Senior in for questioning. However, in October of 2008, the FBI called off the agents for Max's case and reassigned all available agents to terrorism. Lieutenant Williams believes that Max's case with the FBI is currently cold and inactive or just closed altogether. On April 1st, 2009, which is the last update made to the Max to Millions website, Yvonne said, quote, "The FBI called in October 2008 and informed me they closed their investigation on Max. Never knowing what happened in the last moments of Max's life will be forever hard. I can truly say our government, as well as the Aruban government, did not do enough to find out what happened to my son. It is so sad when a child is lost, killed, missing, or taken. But when it happens in another country, you have no help or paperwork to fill out. Lose a piece of luggage, though, and the paperwork and calls never end." Ugh, it's just so, so hard to deal with. And very true, honestly. There should be more that you can do. There's just not.
Well, we were just having a discussion earlier today about, you know, traveling and the risks that it poses, because you never know what kind of, if you do run into a situation like this or a health crisis, which is what we were specifically chatting about earlier, that depending on where you are, you don't know what kind of help or support you're going to get, if any, or you'll be extorted or Just endless things can happen. It can make traveling very scary. You know, it's like, I think stories like this are important to hear because it's important to not let your guard down on vacation, which is like the one time you really want to, but it's so important to stay vigilant, keep an eye on, you know, the people around you and sort of have plans in place, which to some degree you really can't. But I don't know, it's just something to keep in mind, you know, and I know we're headed into like spring break and summer and a lot of people are going to be traveling and it doesn't hurt to have that extra layer of awareness, have your guard up to some degree and be as prepared as you can be.
Yeah, and I would say too, another just like little tip is wherever you're going, go check out the country or the travel advisories for that country the Department of State website if you're in the US, and you know, Canada, UK all have similar types of websites probably. And you can actually go look up like travel risks for the area that you're going to. You can also make sure you save like the US ambassador or consular's office information, because they're a great resource if something does go wrong. And I think you can even get updates, sign up for updates there in case something does happen. Definitely recommend doing that. And, you know, just make sure the area you're going to is, you know, has a safe advisory in place. You know, like there's a lot of places that they, you know, the government advises you not to travel for different
America
reasons.
America is one of those for other countries.
Yeah.
True.
And I can
see
why. Yeah. It's kind of, it's like no matter where you go, there's some level of risk everywhere. And I don't say this to scare people or deter people from traveling, because travel is so important. And there's so many beautiful places that really do rely on tourism and it helps so many. But it's just, it's important message, I think, to be aware, you know, to not let your guard down completely, because you never know what might happen, whether or not it's crime or, you know, just an injury. You don't know what medical care you can get. It's just something to research and go in as prepared as you can be.
Absolutely.
You know, and be aware of random people around you. You know, there are a lot of predators out there that specifically go to tourist destinations because they're looking for people who have let their guard down and are vulnerable or trusting
or they know
looking to make friends.
Yeah,
you know,
they know that law enforcement isn't as prevalent.
Yes,
or
exactly
looking out for people like they do in other places.
Exactly.
Which there's a program called Smart Traveler Enrollment Program that is for U.S. citizens. You can enroll there to get alerts, get travel advisories, which is really helpful. It also will help the U.S. Embassy contact you in an emergency, whether natural disaster, civil unrest, or family emergency. And it also helps family and friends get in touch with you in case something happens. So
Definitely
just worth doing if you're traveling out of the country. And again, check your if you're not in the U.S., check your country's State Department or travel advisories as well.
So for nearly 7 years, there were absolutely no developments in Max's case. And life for Yvonne and Dominique, I mean, they did their best to kind of move on as much as they could. But they always knew that there had to be more to find. You know, how do you just let something like this completely go? And they continually reached out to investigators, reporters, and anyone who would listen. In 2012, Aruban officials issued a death certificate for Natalie Holloway, but Aruban officials never gave a death certificate to the DeVries family. But finally, in 2016, there was a new break in the case. And at this point, Max had been missing for 12 years. So an unnamed woman contacted Yvonne in April, saying that she had dated David Russell Stacy Jr. And she was with Jr. for around 1 year. She had spent time with Senior as well, and he visited them while he came down to Knoxville. And Senior and the ex-girlfriend were once together in Junior's living room, and he asked her if Junior had ever mentioned, quote, the 14-year-old boy who went missing in Aruba. And she said she had never heard of him. Senior responded that Junior was, quote, very close to him and that it hurt him really bad. Later that night, she asked Junior what happened to the 14-year-old boy, which started an argument between the two of them. Junior threatened her and told her to never bring it up again. And she listened, and she never brought up Max again. Junior also revealed that he was molested as a young boy, but he never said if it was his father who molested him. So we're not really sure there. But after that, the woman noticed how Senior acted strangely toward her own son, and she questioned the relationship. Senior got very close with this unnamed woman's 10-year-old son, wanting to take him places and buy him things. And at first, she was kind of excited that someone had taken an interest in her son, but soon that interest became way too much and really strange. So Senior had always wanted her son to sit on his lap. Big red flag. And he would get super forceful about it, similar to when he asked Yvonne to take Max out on the jet skis. But between Senior's strange actions toward the woman's son and Junior's temper surrounding Max, the woman decided to end the relationship. And after she left, she finally looked up Max's case and alleged that Junior and Senior were involved. After she left Junior, he became involved with another unnamed woman who also reached out to Yvonne. Junior was a heavy drinker, and one night he said to this woman, quote, "The only thing that my father ever did for me was get me out of some trouble in Aruba." She had never heard about Max's case and was confused by what he meant by this. I mean, she had no idea what he was talking about. And between the evening of March 30th and March 31st, 2016, the new girlfriend allegedly heard Junior say Max's name in his sleep. So she woke him up and asked him who Max was, and he wouldn't answer. And again, an argument breaks out. He's clearly very sensitive when it comes to talking about Max. And when she kept pushing him about it, he completely snapped. She called her brother-in-law to come pick her up, and then Junior grabbed a shotgun and told her to call her brother-in-law back and tell him not to show up or else he'd kill him. Then he forced her to undress, struck her in the face with the butt of his shotgun, choked and then bound her with a cord, slashed her breast, and assaulted her with a hairbrush, and then, very disturbing, but then he raped her. He kept her bound and assaulted until 5 p.m. on the 31st, which eventually he passed out from alcohol and drug use, and she was able to free herself and called 911 before cops then arrested Junior. He was charged with 2 counts of aggravated rape, 3 counts of aggravated assault, and 1 count of aggravated kidnapping. David Russell Stacy Jr. was then jailed in Knox County in lieu of a $450,000 bond. Knox County court records showed various drug arrests in Jr.'s past and a domestic assault conviction from 1995. Following this outburst and the statements made by Jr. to his ex-girlfriend, Lieutenant Williams alleged that Jr. was also involved in Max's disappearance. Lieutenant Williams thought Junior was not in his hotel room when staff were, you know, banging on the door. And instead, he met his father and Max out on the water. He suspects that the two of them assaulted Max together, killed him, and then disposed of his body. And this theory would explain why Junior showed up only minutes before his father arrived on the shore, but couldn't hear the hotel staff as they were banging on the door. He was never in his room, which I'm sure a lot of you already suspected that as well. Lieutenant Williams reached out to the prosecuting attorney in Junior's 2016 case to work together and gather any information they could for Max's case. However, the case fell apart only a few weeks later for unknown reasons. The court chalked it up to an overuse of drugs and alcohol, and Junior received 2 years of probation.
What?
Mind-blowing.
How did this happen?
I don't know, man. I ask myself this with almost every case we cover. What the fuck? How does this happen?
Yeah, this is insane. There must have been a really good reason that this fell apart.
I mean, probably not. If I were to guess, I think it's convenient that they just say unknown reasons.
God.
It's just such a failure to all of society. But anyway, according to some, the woman reentered a relationship after she was released from the hospital, and she likely left at some point later, considering she reached out to Yvonne a short while after the case fell apart. And as of 2024, there are no new public developments into the disappearance of Max DeVries. In 2023, Joran Vandersloot admitted that he killed Natalie Holloway in 2005. I'm sure many of you followed that update. And the Visit Aruba website lists missing persons last seen on the island. Natalie is still featured on it. However, Max never was. Junior and Senior are reportedly still alive. Senior lives in a suburb outside of Chicago, while Junior is a mechanic in Knoxville, Tennessee. Junior's probation ended in 2019, and he has not been in trouble with the law as far as we know. According to Reddit, he has recently married, though this is, of course, it's from Reddit, so it's unconfirmed. Lieutenant Corey Williams has since retired from the Livonia Police Department, but is still investigating both the Oakland County child killer case and Max's disappearance on his own.
And Yvonne and Dominique DeVries are still looking for answers as to what happened to Max. They believe Junior and Senior are the only ones who truly know what happened to him that day on the water. Like we mentioned earlier, there's that great show that covers Max's case. Highly recommend watching it over there on Investigation Discovery called Never Seen Again. It recently just came out as of a couple weeks ago of this recording. Definitely check it out. His mother is very prevalent throughout it. On the Max to the Millions website, a charitable effort by Yvonne to give back and spread Max's story, there's an excerpt that reads, quote, "Max died 18 months after his father died. He died in Aruba. We went there to celebrate our strength. The school year was ending and we made it. Max went out on a jet ski and was lost at sea. Our family found so much comfort and laughter by the water. Now there is much sadness. Max died at sea on May 12, 2004. He was 14 years old. We're trying to spread the word to get Max's story out, to get that one person to want to help, to get his case reopened," Yvonne said. "Not that it's ever going to bring him back, but so that it won't happen again. I hope whatever happened to Max happened fast." And she hopes that he went straight into his dad's arms in heaven. She also said that she just wants an end to the story and not just limbo.
So upsetting.
Yeah, so difficult. Max to the Millions has been inactive since April 1st, 2009, and still, through her charitable donations, Yvonne funded a room at Mott's Children's Hospital for mothers of premature babies and Tourette Syndrome support group. She ends one post with, quote, "That's why in George's and Max's memory I do this. I need Dominique to know that it's important for her to remember and talk of her father and brother in a warm and loving way when others stop talking and remembering. That's what her family was all about, giving to others while loving and enjoying each other. With angels watching over us and friends by our side, we are blessed." While Junior and Senior are easily the most suspicious between their changing stories and criminal past, looking into the Aruban law enforcement claim that Max was simply lost at sea following a tragic mechanical failure is definitely worthwhile. The U.S. State Department's page on Aruba states that the tourism industry is unevenly regulated and safety inspections for equipment and facilities do not commonly occur. With proper care and maintenance, a Waverunner jet ski, like the one Max disappeared while riding, can last far longer than the recommended 300 hours. But it's important to consider that this was a rental, meaning that it could have been far more hours on it than a typical jet ski, and since we know that Sunshine Water Sports was being run illegally, I think it's fair to assume that they did not provide proper maintenance for the jet ski, which would have led to it having a mechanical failure. Actually, just last year, a father and son encountered the same issue when their jet ski stalled in Aruba. The son removed his life vest and was found swimming to shore while his father was never recovered. While Max was very experienced at sea, people can panic when they encounter a mechanical failure and will remove their life vest in an attempt to swim. In March of 2023, a 15-year-old boy died in North Carolina after his jet ski stalled, and he was very experienced and was known to take his jet ski out to Jordan Lake whenever he had time away from work or school. His friend went to get help, but when he returned, the jet ski was empty and the life vest was floating nearby, and his body was found 2 days later. But obviously, still with everything we know about Junior and Senior, it's very difficult to believe that they weren't involved in some way in Max's disappearance. And as of now, David Russell Stacy Sr. is the only person who knows what truly happened to Max. And I believe that 110%.
I do too. I mean, obviously we have to say alleged and they're innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. In my personal opinion, they are it's very obvious that they did something to him. And it's like, it's hard to even comprehend how this could have played out. I've like gone over multiple ideas in my head of what could have happened. I mean, did they actually like assault him out on the sandbar?
Possible.
And then kill him? Or did they get, is it possible a boat could have been rented And then they assaulted him on the
boat. Junior rented a boat.
Maybe.
And met them out there somewhere.
It seems like with this investigation, really no investigation, anything could have happened. What if he was brought offshore and brought somewhere else? I mean, very unlikely that he could still be out there, but it's a possibility. It seems like their family has accepted that he's probably no longer with us, and that does make most sense, but I can't help it. My mind goes there, you know?
Well, it's like, I go back to, how is he not found? How is his body not found? Yeah. Unless they did something to him that would make him sink, mm-hmm. and therefore wouldn't appear on the surface.
Yeah. Anymore. Brought him out further.
Right.
Tied something to him.
You know what I mean? So there had to have been more involved for him to just vanish that soon after a search began. Because they did do an exhaustive search of the area surrounding the sandbar, miles off of shore. I just am like, how did they not find him floating? Or even the life vest.
I know.
That he had on. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, who knows what happened, what Junior was doing during all of this.
Yeah.
You know?
And had the Aruban authorities are absolutely on the hook for this one, because they mm-hmm. failed this family big time. Because there's probably evidence out there. It's probably gone now, but there probably was evidence that could have put the pieces together and the timeline together mm-hmm. in a more concrete way to figure out what actually happened. Because it's clear Junior was up to something. We don't know. I don't buy a story of I was just sleeping in my room during when all this went down. It's also very strategic, in my opinion, that they went out the first day together, and then the next day they want to do the exact same thing again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's almost like they had saw
Junior goes out, now dad wants to go out with him.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very weird.
Needs help.
Exactly.
And you can't help but go back. I mean, you have to go back to the fact that Senior had these bruises and
The scratches. Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck is that? And then the fact he was allowed to shower, and they wouldn't do DNA testing, wouldn't do a polygraph. I mean, if those things were done, this could be solved right now. We could have the answers. It's so frustrating.
I mean, all of their actions indicate that they're guilty in some way, in my opinion. If this was truly a freak accident, and maybe Senior had been trying to work on the jet ski and he scraped his hands up while working on the inner workings of it in some way, shape, or form, why would you not divulge that info? All of his statements don't lead me to believe that he was being truthful in any way, shape, or form.
No, and we know he wasn't truthful because he's telling her his wife died recently, and then come to find out that's a lie. It's just a way to prey on this family.
And for all we know, this wasn't the first time they've done this to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And they've had practice at doing this. And this was a very calculated, all these moves were calculated on their part. And they probably knew that the Aruban authorities, it'd be very easy to create an accident scenario. So if they go forward with this plan to assault Max and it goes bad, Max starts fighting back and there's going to be evidence of a struggle and Max is going to come back and report them to the police that he was assaulted. Obviously, they know they have to get rid of him at that point. Mm. And so they had a plan for that as well. Because I just don't see, without a thought out plan, if things go not according to plan in their eyes, how Max just disappears without a trace.
That doesn't make any sense.
In 3 miles offshore, if that's even where they went. For all we know, he went took Max a mile down the beach to a boat or something, or another person on a jet ski grabs him. I mean, there's so many scenarios that could have played out here that just we'll never know unless they confess to what happened. But then again, it's like, can we even believe anything they say at this point?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I doubt that they would ever just willingly confess, you know? I mean, maybe if it's like a deathbed confessional type thing is like our best hope, but
I just don't believe that horrific, Max man. His jet ski broke down, he just takes off his life vest and then decided to swim back to shore drowned.
I don't believe that.
And then Matt, the senior just decided oh, well, I'm going to return to shore without him. I'm not going to try to pull him out of the water and bring him back with me. Hmm. And again, in that scenario, I feel like they would have found him 100%. So something very, very weird happened. Something very sinister happened. And these guys are, I mean, they're career criminals. Look at their past. So I wouldn't put
it past
them.
And what a failure, not only to their family, but to everyone, that these guys are out there. I mean, have totally reoffended.
Yeah.
You know, this unnamed woman may not have ever encountered him if he was right, locked up and held accountable for what really happened. I mean, it's just terrible. And who knows what else they've done or could continue to do.
Absolutely. No, it's a travesty. It's just,
yeah, infuriating.
It's sickening. It's sickening that these types of people are just living their lives.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this family is forever going to suffer.
She has to live with never knowing what happened to her son.
I seriously don't know how she goes on.
Yeah. All of the theories are horrifying.
Yeah, you know, they are.
All of it's terrible.
No matter
there's no
what
good,
you come up with, no
good situation that comes of this at all.
No. To have to just, it really stood out to me when she said, I just hope whatever happened, happened fast. To even have to have that thought as a parent, cannot imagine. So horrible. This poor kid, so much potential and whole life ahead of him. Just a
supposed to be
adorable,
a fun trip,
loving, smart child.
Go there to make good memories, yeah, and you leave with bad ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Janelle, any thoughts on what you think happened?
I was just doing a search on human trafficking in Aruba because I was like, what if there's any way in which, yeah, they brought him somewhere.
That's
like
kind of what I was thinking too.
I mean, it's really just a theory at this point. I do think it's so weird that I kind of think that most likely they took him somewhere and either drove far away from shore and left his body, or met up with someone else who took him far away from shore. I don't think he disappeared from the sandbar.
I think that's unlikely too.
It just seems like he would have, like something would have turned up, the life jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Either anything. That or he brought him to the sandbar. There's someone there waiting for him to help him take it. Because I struggle with, would Max have willingly just like followed Senior some other direction?
Maybe. He seemed really comfortable with him and
could be.
had trusted him.
Well, how do you like coordinate something like that too? Because if you're just at a sandbar in a populated tourist area, you never know if other people are going to be there.
That's my thing. You know? And like, why? Because their whole thing is like, oh, he was at the sandbar and then he was not. It's like,
other people could have ran across him. Yeah.
And also, wouldn't you be a little more prepared at, like, with your alibi and your excuse of like if that was really true, wouldn't you say something different then? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
If he really was last seen in the sandbar and you guys know what happened to him, I would probably think you wouldn't say what is actually true, in which he was last seen there. Right. So my guess is that he was brought somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that makes a lot of sense.
It was like they did their test run the day before.
Yeah, it's kind
of
how
build
it seems.
That trust with him, and then the second time they executed their plan. It seems like they were preyed upon the moment they got there. Mm-hmm. These guys were looking for their victims. They found the single mom.
I think they came there specifically with the intent to do this to somebody.
Yeah.
And so who knows how much planning went into before they even got there, right, or contacting people on the island, arranging something. I definitely, in my opinion, I don't think human trafficking is out of the question. I hate to bring that up because I'm sure it's just like beyond comprehension for his family to think that way. And I think they've accepted that he is no longer here, and that most likely is is the outcome. However, I think you never know. It's incredibly common.
I think it's worth at least considering, but again, it just sucks that there was no investigation.
No, I mean,
and now
how
like,
much more we would know, or this 100% could have been solved, and easily. Ugh, it's maddening.
Yeah, I mean, human trafficking is a big issue in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. Big time.
It's a major thing. So it's possible. Yeah.
Big time.
But yeah, let us know your thoughts on this one. I'm curious if anybody has any other ideas.
Yeah.
As to what could have happened to to poor Max. But obviously, you know, we, I just, my heart goes out to Yvonne and Dominique, and it's just such a tough thing to lose your father and then lose your brother and son and have to go on in life. And, it's just terrible.
It's traumatic beyond words, really.
It really is. But that's where we're going to leave you this week.
Definitely let us know your thoughts, guys. You guys always bring up really interesting theories and ideas, sometimes things that we hadn't even considered. So it's always nice to kind of hear from you guys. That's going to be it. We'll be back next week to discuss another case. I think next week we're getting into some...
A very interesting kind of cult-like group.
It's pretty wild stuff.
Maybe some aliens, which will be... fascinating, I'm sure. So we'll see you then.
Yep. Until then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.